This episode of The Sit Down is powered by BetterHelp. We're all looking for a way to improve ourselves, whether it's our mental health, our physical health, really health in general. One of the best resources I can honestly recommend is BetterHelp. Something preventing you from achieving your goals? What interferes with your happiness? Why aren't you happy? We need you to be happy. Life is about happiness. And it's time to get familiar with BetterHelp. BetterHelp will help you assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Connect in a private online environment in up to 48 hours. It can go quick and go fast. We can get you on board with someone that can help you quick. It's not a crisis line. It's a self-help line, but it's professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime, and they have licensed professional counselors who specialize in everything from depression, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, grief, anger, really whatever your issue is. BetterHelp's got you covered and can help you out. Anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. Look, as many of you know, I lost a lot of weight recently. Not only has it helped my physical health, but it's helped my mental health. And there are some things that on a personal level I like to get help with. I advise go get BetterHelp now. I want you to start living a healthier life today, just like I have. As a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/sitdown. Again, join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/sitdown.
Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau. We are back here live, another show, another week, another sit down. And we got another great one planned for you today. You know, life is busy. I know for me right now, I got a lot going on, but as we always say, it's always nice to come full circle every week and just kind of get away. This is, you know, it's funny because I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't do any of that stuff. This is my alcohol blackjack, I'll have to say. I get to escape the world a little bit and delve into another fascinating mafia figure. And we're going to do that today. We're coming off two huge shows. Obviously, the Myers show last week, the Lucky show the week before. We have a really fascinating person today and someone that I guarantee no other mob show is going to do and dedicate basically an hour to. One of the most fascinating people in the history of the mob, really a war hero, got into becoming one of the most prolific earners in the history of the Genovese crime family, was of recent note involved with a documentary that we'll talk about. We're going to talk today about Matty the Horse Iannello, who really lives the just a wild life, and I'm interested in kind of letting you get to know who he was. We're also going to do a Q&A, which we haven't done in a couple of weeks. Let's bring in our co-host, our esteemed colleague, our consigliere, the great Blackjack Fletcher. Blackjack, what's happening? How you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. And, you know, I like the way you put it that, you know, this is kind of a little bit of an escape each week because, you know, I mean, we both obviously do a lot of stuff in sports and gambling, and it's kind of nice to just take your mind off and, you know, think about something else for a while. And this show's great at that.
Things become more boring as your life gets older, Blackjack. you know, I was thinking today, so football was on, but I had just some things around my house that I had to do. And I need to buy a new dresser. I've been wanting to do that for a while. And I literally sat on the internet for like half an hour looking at dressers and how excited I was to find the right dresser. So, you know, it's all about matching and making sure it works and how it's going to look and how I spaced out. So, you know, as you get older, things become less and less interesting, but let's delve into another show. As always, we appreciate you listening. Make sure you check out all of our sponsors. Make sure you check out everything we're doing. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. And you can follow us on Twitter at The Sit Down 7. Let's kind of delve into the show. We'll get to Matty the Horse Iannello in just a little bit. But we want to answer some of your questions. We always get a lot of good ones on DM and through the Twitter account. So let's kind of jump into it. We'll start out with the first one. Definitely a good question here. Comes from Deborah, who's a fan of the show. She said, was Father Louis Gigante involved with the mob in any way? I just finished watching a documentary on Chin, or I think she read a book on Chin. I didn't write that down completely. But no, the Father Louis Gigante was not involved with the mob. He was involved with the papal duties. He was a priest up in the Bronx, in the South Bronx, ended up becoming a councilman many years later. The only involvement he had with the mafia was the fact that his brother was the de facto head of the Genovese crime family. And in fact, was probably the most influential boss of the last 50 years in America. And his other brother was a top capo and acting boss at one point. Did he do a little lying? Probably. I don't know if God will look down on Lewis and be very happy with that. But no, he was not involved with the mafia outside of the fact that he had association. So I guess you could call him an associate. Now, he did recently make news, and we talked about this on the show. In July of 2021, it was reported that Gigante had sexually abused an innocent 9-year-old boy on multiple occasions. So, again, while he was a priest, there are some things that have popped up. It was reported. We don't have that, nor do we have the fact that he was found guilty of all that. But no, as far as I know, he was not involved with the mafia. I would expect that Blackjack that he would not be involved with the mob outside of his familial relationship.
I would expect not. It's okay. He was part of another organized crime family. You know, the Catholic Church has their
that's true.
Has their own problems. I don't know that anyone operates a bigger racket than the Catholic Church. So there's that.
Correct.
And I can say that I'm a Catholic.
Agreed. I'm wearing my St. Anthony necklace, right? And I have a Bible on my bed next to my bed. Arthur, have you ever thought about doing a show on Vinny Ocean Palermo? I was reading up on him and would love to know more about it. Thanks. Well, I don't know if we'll do one on Vinny Ocean. We'll do one on the DeCavalcantes because I think it's warranted. Now, many people will believe that, and this is actually truthful, some of Tony Soprano was based on Vinny Palermo. Vinny Ocean was someone that owned a strip club. He had a lot of interesting similarities to Tony Soprano, did go into witness protection after becoming a rat, and has still around. He lives in Texas, as far as I know. I don't know if we'll do a show on him, but we'll definitely do a show on the quote, real Sopranos. Now, it's important to remember, they're not actually the real Sopranos. The Sopranos were based on multiple different groups, including the Boyardos and the DeCavalcantes and other individuals as well. So, yeah, I mean, we'll probably do something on the DeCavalcantes, not necessarily Vinny Ocean, but he'll be a part of that show for sure. Benjamin, if you were in the life, we know you're not, what family would you be a part of? I've answered this before, and it will never change. The Genovese crime family, it's that simple. It was the Ivy League. They made the most money. They always seemed a bit what's the word I'm looking for? Luxurious. They always seem kind of like the rich guys in the mob. I feel like I'd want to work for Tony Salerno. So absolutely the Genovese. Would you agree with that, Blackjack? Would you want to be a part of the Columbos, wouldn't you?
No, I'm more of a Gambino guy myself. I think the Gambinos are probably the sexier of the families. Mm-hmm. You know, just with obviously you've got John Gotti and Carlo Gambino and the Castellano hit and everything that's gone on there. I would probably lean in that direction, but you're not wrong when you say that the Genoveses are the creme de la creme of the five families.
Well, now I'll give you one better, Blackjack. What group would you want to be in? Would you want to be in the Ravenite group? Would you want to be in the Bergen crew? Would you want to be in the Gemini Lounge crew? You have to pick one. Bergen crew, right?
I think it's either Bergen or Ravenite. I don't know. I might be a Ravenite guy.
I could see you doing that. I could see you being in the Ravenite. I could see you hanging out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a little flashier. I feel like I'd be in the Ravenite.
We had that question. You know, I don't think you were on the show when we had that question. Were you on the question show when we had a question about did any mobster ever have a Texas accent?
Yes.
Maybe you could be called the Texan. You would wear like cowboy hats.
Maybe.
You know? Or Blackjack, you know.
I mean, Blackjack's a pretty badass. It's funny you said it because I was just thinking when you introed the show, you know, we talk about all these guys every week and they all have awesome nicknames, right? Like Matty the Horse. It's a great nickname. Yeah. Blackjack kind of works with that.
Yeah. And by the way, it's important to remember Blackjack's name. That's not his real name. His name is not Blackjack Fletcher. Okay. It's a nickname. Just like, you know, Matty the Horse's name was not Matty the Horse. That was not his real name. Which I don't think I need to explain to a lot of you. Okay. You're walking down a street and you need three guys to be, hang out with you as you walk into a bad neighborhood. You may be attacked. You pick three from history. Who are you picking? You cannot pick any rat. Okay. So you can't pick Greg Scarpa or Anthony Queso or anyone like that. Okay. Tommy Patera for sure. Yep.
That's the first name that came to my mind.
And not only does he kill, but he knows karate, which is enough in itself. I'm going to give you some, and Blackjack, I'll see if you can do a few on the fly. I'll give you some names that you would not hear of anyone mention, but I like to go a little bit more off the beaten path. Michael Mickey Boy Paradiso. I think he's one of the most dangerous people in the history of the mob. No one will ever bring him up. He's actually still alive and he is still involved with the life, according to the federal government. He's been around since like the 50s. This is a guy that has killed a lot of people. He admitted on tape he killed these people. This is a guy whose own brother dimed him out to the FBI. He was actually Blackjack, the individual involved with the hit on Anthony Casso. He was involved with that. He was one of the people along with Angie Ruggiero that put that in motion. He was one of the reasons James Heidel was killed in the Nicky Guido thing. Paradiso is a psychopath. He had threatened on tape to kill his own daughter. Real psychopath kind of individual. He had once said, if I use my hands, I'm going to kill somebody. I'll kill them. I'll stab them in their fucking throat. I'll cut their fucking throat. When I get mad, I'm just a different person. I don't rationalize. I don't like to get like that. He also said to his wife at one point, I quoted 19 years with blank, which would be a derogatory term to black individuals. And I had better Christmases, Thanksgivings, or any holiday in there than I had here. Because every time I'm here, your husband's got a fucking attitude. And one day I'm going to shoot him in his fucking head. And you're going to make me so crazy that I'll end up shooting you too. A real psychopath. He also promised to sever the head of a little old man who ducked financial obligations to him, insisting that unlike other less committed mobsters, he's not afraid to carry out threats. Quote, I'll shoot a guy in the fucking head. I don't know who else is going to do that. In other words, they won't pull that tough guy shit when the time comes. Me, I'll do what I say. I don't give a fuck if I go to jail. That's an individual that is dangerous. And I would put him up against anybody. According to the FBI, he is part of the governing board of the Gambinos currently, according to the FBI again. And one other person, no one will mention this guy, Vito Guzzo Jr., very dangerous individual, currently doing 39 years. By the way, Blackjack, Vito Guzzo doing 39 years, Colombo, a soldier, five murders he copped a plea to and is doing 39 years. So he will get out at some point.
Yeah.
Vito is a wild individual, beat somebody with a fire extinguisher, almost to death, killed multiple people. Extremely dangerous. Him and that Giannini crew in Western Queens, very dangerous people. Do you have anyone at the top of your head, Blackjack, that you you would want on your side?
I got different reasons for it, right? The first one you said right off the bat, it's Tommy Patera, because Tommy Patera can kick ass in any number of ways, right? The karate stuff, he's not afraid to get his hands dirty. He's number one on the list. Number two after that, I'm taking Mr. Neal because I want to hang out with Mr. Neal, and he's got that badass cold stare that looks right through you.
Definitely very imposing. I'll give you that.
Very imposing. And number three, I want Paul Castellano to use as a human shield if shit goes down.
Very fat and big. So
I want to use him as a human shield. I can kind of maneuver behind Big Paul.
Yeah, so you went a different way with it, but definitely good. I agree with that. Maybe Joe Messina, he was bigger. Did you or Blackjack have the makings of a varsity athlete? I'm wondering what you mean by that. Do you mean that we like literally did, or are you meaning like the
varsity on what level? Like I played varsity basketball in high school.
No, I think what he's saying is, do you have the makings of being in the mob? I guess.
Oh, That's, I got you. I thought we were talking literally.
Well, probably today I probably would. I don't know if in the 80s or 90s I would have.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know, I mean, different times, right? Like, probably not in the 80s or 90s. But I think if I was born in, like, the 30s or 40s, like, yeah. I mean, I'm not afraid to, you know, blur the lines a little bit. I think a lot of it's time and place, right? Like, there's more opportunities now than there were back then. I think that if, you know, if you were born in a time where there was less opportunity, I don't think that our personalities would discourage us from doing it.
No, not exactly, not at all. Paul, how mobbed up or powerful was Jimmy Galante? Seems like he had a lot of sway in Connecticut. Thanks. We're going to talk about him today. To be truthful, he didn't really have any power in the mob. That simple. He wasn't in the mob. He was kicking up to Matt Iannello, who's the acting boss of the family, after Vince Gigante went away. And he basically was told to do it, and he did it. You're not going to tell the boss of the Genovese family to go fuck himself. You're just not. And he used it as a way to win bids and control the Connecticut waste disposal industry. Did he have power or sway? Yeah, for sure. But not in the mob. Did he have power in Danbury? Yeah, that's where he was from. And look, he definitely was rich. He controlled the garbage business. But and some of the things that he was able to do was because of his connections to Matty Iannello. But Matty Iannello eyed him like he would eye, you know, an extortion racket and a strip club owner. You do what I say or you don't, and you deal with me. Are you in that life or just an outsider? No, I'm not in the mafia, and neither is Blackjack. We've said that many times. We are not in the mafia.
Mafia doesn't exist.
Right. Nick, where does Joe Legambi rank among bosses in Philly mob history? This is actually a pretty good question. Look, I'll be honest. Joe Legambi was a pretty good boss in all encompass purposes. And the truth of the matter is the Philadelphia mafia has never really had any good bosses. Nicky Scarfo was a complete mess. John Stanfa was horrific. You know, Bruno was good. He became hypocritical, though, towards the end of his reign. Joey Molino, you know, definitely controlled the young guys. You know, Joe Legambi really evened things out. I think he took the family back behind the scenes, which is where they needed to be. And now he just lives out his life as an old guy. That's what he does. I would say he was a pretty good one in all intents and purposes. He didn't go to jail, really, outside of that, I think, year he did, and he ended up getting off, so... Yeah, I think he was pretty good, to be honest. All right. Why was the Genovese family called the West Side? Because they controlled the West Side. pretty simple. And I hate to be that forthright, but it's that simple. They controlled Manhattan. Really, it's no more difficult. pretty easy, right, Blackjack?
It is.
They control the Upper West Side. And
explanatory.
All right, a couple of more here. How do you and Blackjack feel about Michael Franzese? Do you put him in the same category as Sammy Gravano? Do you watch his YouTube videos and take anything he says seriously? Curious if you guys find him better or worse than Sammy. Thanks for the show. Okay, do I watch his YouTube videos? Nah, not really anymore. I think Michael will tell you this. I think Michael's running out of content, to be real honest with you. And that's why he's like sitting there doing reviews of every single Sopranos episode. He was lucky that Columbo Bus happened because he could get content out of it. The problem Michael has, and I'll say this till the day I die, Michael is not willing to talk about his time in the life. The thing that Sammy has on him is that Sammy is a cooperator and everything came out. Okay. So he can talk about everything. He could talk about the fact that he killed people. Michael never killed anybody, nor did he even hurt anybody. So there's nothing for him to talk about there. He can only talk about the gas tax scheme so much. And I think, you know, willingly enough, he's on that kind of weird platform where he says he left like willingly and everyone was okay with it. But I feel like he's still not willing to talk about his past. Like he doesn't really bring up Carmine Persico. He doesn't really talk about Mush Russo. He doesn't bring up the Gallo. He doesn't bring up any of that stuff. So do I think he's in the same category as Sammy? Well, they were both in the mob, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question, right? Because I have such an emotional, visceral response to Sammy Gravano that nobody's in that category for me. Like, Sammy Gravano's in a category of one in my mind. Like, he just is. Michael Franzese to me is more of, you know, I don't know. He's more of a clownish figure these days. Like, I think he wants to be kind of a celebrity. Like, he produced that mafia play out in Vegas a few years ago that he did like a voiceover for. Yeah, I feel like he wants to be like a Hollywood guy. And I don't know. I almost kind of feel bad for him in some ways, because like you said, he's running out of content. Like, I don't know where Michael Franzese goes from there. Like, I don't know. But I unequivocally, no, I do not put him in the same category as Sammy Gravano.
No, I think they're definitely different. I mean, Michael Franzese, all he was an earner. That simple. He is the yuppie don. That was a great title for him. He wasn't even close to his father. He made money, and we'll definitely give him that. Do I take anything he says seriously? Yeah, I definitely think some of the stuff he does is good. I like some of his stuff, but I've heard his story before. I don't need to see him interviewing Chaz Palminteri for the sixth time. I've seen it. I think they have different kind of things they do. What else do we have here? How has the growth of legal online gambling affected Mob sportsbook revenue? It's hurt it a lot. The good thing, though, is in New York, which is where the Mob is still its strongest, they don't have legalized gambling in New York. Places like Philadelphia, New Jersey, Chicago, they definitely have taken a hit, 100%. Sure. The good thing is, though, and you and I both know this, people still like to bet on credit. And if I go to FanDuel in South Philly on Packer Avenue right now, and I want to bet on the Steelers, I need $500 up front. Okay. A bookmaker will give me a line of credit for $1,500 and I can settle up every week, whether I'm up or down. So I don't need to put money up. And that's something people like.
That's it. I mean, it's put a dent in their business without a question. But like you said, sportsbooks don't let you bet on credit. They do. So that will always exist.
All right. Final question. Who is the more powerful boss, Joe Masseria or Salvatore Maranzano? Well, look, Maranzano wasn't in control very long. It's pretty simple. Joe Masseria has been around for a long time. Masseria was born in 1886, for God's sakes. He came to America. I mean, he was doing a ton with Giuseppe Morello in the 1910s. He kind of took over the Morello crime family and really kind of took it to the next level. I don't know. I mean, it was a fascinating battle. I think both of them had their pluses. And you know, ultimately, the bigger man out of all of them was Lucky Luciano. He was the most powerful. I don't know, probably Masseria slightly. But, they were both kind of in groups that, you know, weren't necessarily totally formed. And they were just kind of fighting back and forth. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess would you rather have Masseria Morello or Maranzano Bonanno? I don't know. I mean, they were all just kind of killing each other in New York, but I would probably say Masseria. By the way, I want to bring up one thing, and this is something that I actually found out recently I did not know. This is a fascinating video. So, Black Chick, there's a guy on YouTube, and I share emails with him all the time. I think he's probably one of the only legitimate people in this space that does mob videos. He has a channel called OC Shorts, and Shorts has a Z at the end. He does these fascinating videos, really well-researched things. He did a video recently on Salvatore Maranzano. Now, obviously, Maranzano passed away in 1931, and back then, there's a problem with legitimate photos of a lot of these people, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when you type in Joe Masseria, there are photos of him. If you go to Google, Blackjack, right now and type in Salvatore Maranzano, there's a picture that's going to pop up, and it's the only known picture of Maranzano. But it's important to realize that is not Salvatore Maranzano. And this guy, OC Shorts, did a fascinating video on how it all came together, that was the photo of him. But there's no known photo of Maranzano. The only known photo is him laying on the floor, killed, and you can't see his face. So I always see Maranzano stuff, and they bring that picture up that's on Google. That's not him. Huh. It's actually someone else, weirdly enough. So yeah, back then there's no photos of him. But all right, let's get into Maddie the Horse Ioniello. As always, thank you for your questions. We will do that again real soon. And I'm going to be proud of this episode, Blackjack, because I know there is no one doing a Maddie the Horse Ioniello show. And I know you just watched the film about Jimmy Galante and a little bit. There wasn't a ton about Ioniello in that, but let's see if we can't explain who this guy was, a fascinating guy who really had seen a lot in his long career. Matthew Joseph Ioniello was born June 18th, 1920, and he was born in Little Italy. He would be one of eight kids. And not a lot's known about his family as far as his parents, but obviously his parents both immigrated from Italy. Growing up, Matty Ioniello enjoyed sports, particularly baseball. He was a big fan of the Yankees. He enjoyed playing baseball. And ultimately, that would be where he would gain his nickname, weirdly enough. During a game as a youth, an opposing pitcher threw a basically a beanball at a friend of his. A fight ensues, a scrum ensues, and Ioniello beats up the pitcher. Someone at the park basically says, "Wow, that guy's as strong as a horse." So they would call him Maddie the Horse after his, I guess, vicious right hook, Blackjack. Maybe he should have got into boxing.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it sounds like he was a pretty strong guy. So, you know, to say someone as strong as a horse is a pretty good compliment.
Yeah, I mean, because horses are obviously very strong. I don't think we realize, and you know this, watching horse racing, it is truly amazing what a horse can do, man. It's so... Yeah. So interesting. During Maddie's teens, he would take a job. His family worked in the restaurant business. His uncle owned a restaurant in Brooklyn on the dockyards, and Matt would work there as a teenager. He would ultimately, though, in his late teens and early 20s, join the Army. He would go into the Army in 1943, and we'd actually, Blackjack, earn a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. He would be an Army artillery gunner in the Philippines and the South Pacific. That's pretty distinguished. I don't know of anyone. Obviously, we know of, you know, Gravano went to the military. Stephen Caracappa was in the military. That's pretty fucking honored. A Bronze Star and a Purple Heart.
Yeah, it is. That's not just going into the military. That's going in and serving with some level of pretty high distinction.
Yeah, it surely is. He would obviously come home right after the war, and he would meet up with his uncle who had the restaurant. They would actually go into partnership into a restaurant called Maddie's Towncrest, which is in Midtown. And that's where in the early 50s, a fascinating story evolved involving Maddie the Horse Ioniello and his love for baseball. In 1951, Maddie was a fan of obviously Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, and obviously Berra and DiMaggio for their Italian lineage. But often, Blackjack, Ioniello would send invites to the Yankees asking for, hey, would any of you guys ever stop by the restaurant I have, Maddie's Towncrest? Eventually, they would go to the restaurant, but he found out that they enjoyed another deli that was close by. He would then meet an individual called Alan Savitt, who was involved with Mantle's career. And at this point, Blackjack, in the early 50s, Mickey Mantle was a rookie. He was a young player.
Yep.
And according to mob lore, this Savitt guy offered a piece of Mickey Mantle to Matty Ioniello. And Ioniello would say in a rare interview many years later, that was a long time ago. Who wouldn't know who Mickey Mantle was even then? Then you'd read all the papers about him. And this hustler was claiming, and he's talking about Savitt, that he had claws into Mantle. Maybe he did. Maybe he conned the kid. But it wasn't going to go anywhere. And Savitt, how could you believe anything coming out of that man's mouth? He would also say, Ioniello, that there's an old Italian expression, bocca di miele, cuore di fili. It means a tongue of honey, a heart of gall. So basically, he was saying that this shyster tried to say that he had a hook into Mickey Mantle, and that ultimately there was a mob lure that did Matty the Horse actually have a stake in Mickey Mantle, or was it just all bullshit? It is possible and plausible that Matty was lying and just covering up. But many years later, I mean, what would they bring on him? It's kind of interesting to think about, though. Did this high-end baseball player have connections with the mob? You'd often wonder back then, were there others like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't find it to be very much of a stretch of the imagination to see Mickey Mantle involved with guys like this. I mean, if you know anything about Mickey Mantle and who he was as a person and kind of his proclivities, you know, he liked to go out, he liked to drink, he liked to cavort with women, he liked to gamble. Mickey Mantle was very much in the lifestyle that would lead him to rubbing elbows with some of these people.
Now, interestingly enough, some stuff would come up that Matt supposedly bragged that he had owned a piece of Mickey Mantle back in the early 50s, according to a guy called Paul Gelb, who was part of Matty Ionello's strip club operations many years later. Quote, I don't know if he ever got anything from Mickey. He just said that he had bought a piece of him from a guy he knew. And of course, Matty knew a lot of people, and he had a way of warming his way into a piece of action he wanted. That's what he did with me. And ultimately, he would kind of take over a lot of this Gelb's businesses. But that's what Matty Ionello was known for. And even from his early life, I mean, you think about it, he's only 30 years old, and he's connecting with one of the most famous baseball players ever. He, and this Gelb guy says it best, Matt Ionello was terrific at worming his way into things, making a ton of money out of it. And you look at it and say, how the hell did that guy get involved with this? In the mid to late 50s, obviously Vito Genovese is working towards taking control of the family. And this is where Matty Ionello would start to become involved with the sex shop trade. By 1960, he was heavily involved with the Genovese crime family and started taking ownership of clubs and sex shops with a guy called Eddie DeCurtis. Eddie DeCurtis was a Gambino associate. And they were big into, one of the big things they had were gay bars. Matty Ionello had all sorts of nightclubs for gay men, including the Gilded Grape, the Haymarket, all different places in Manhattan and outside. And that's one thing that if you've ever read into Carlo Gambino, he was also very involved through Edward DeCurtis in these strip clubs and clubs for men. Matt would also obviously get very involved with sex shops, porn places, Times Square eventually, and we'll get into that. But also he was heavily involved with unions. He would become involved with the local 1181, which is the bus drivers union. He was also involved with the Teamsters. By the 60s, Blackjack, Matt Ionello was making money and he was getting his hands into everything.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I get the involvement in the gay clubs, right? If you're thinking about the 1960s, it's not exactly socially acceptable to be publicly gay. And you open up these clubs and you know what? People will pay for privacy. They will pay to make sure that what they do and who they're with in there is kept a secret. And additionally, you have leverage over your clientele because they don't want people to know that they're there. So it cuts really both ways in the same direction. So a smart business, and you're right. Carlo Gambino was involved in it, and Ionello made a lot of money off of those clubs. So not a bad business strategy at that point in time.
Yeah, keep in mind as well with the involvement in some of these unions, including that bus driver union, he was empowered to basically extort payments from all the school bus companies in New York, as well as the union drivers. So, you know, any, you know, long haul buses, all that stuff. This was unions that were obviously big time moneymakers. By the early 70s, Matty Ionello would pretty much run the adult underworld operations in New York. And if you've ever seen the show The Deuce, Matty Ionello is actually a character in that show. It's a show about the 70s and Times Square. Times Square was a weird place back then.
Yeah,
it was a very seedy spot. It was kind of a red light district type of place. And literally all there was there were peep show, porn places, topless dancer clubs, go-go bars, sex shops. Matt Iannello literally controlled all of them. And there were up to 80 or so. And by this point, Times Square was his. We don't hear a lot about Times Square in really the lore of the mob, interestingly enough, but it was big money back then.
It was huge money. And as you said, that's what Times Square was. It was the red light district of New York City. Sex shops, movie theaters. I mean, anything you could think of was in Times Square until Rudy Giuliani ruined that for us too.
Exactly. And now Times Square is just a tourist haven, which ended up working out for the city. I get it. Matt would also have some good news in his life. He'd be promoted to captain in the Genovese family after Vincent Jimmy Blue Eyes Allo would retire. Jimmy Blue Eyes Allo was a big time capo under Meyer Lansky, worked kind of in his cohort, and he would retire. So Matt Iannello would take over control of that group, and he would move them from Brooklyn into Manhattan. And this is kind of where he would get close to Vincent the Chin Gigante. And obviously that would be a relationship that would prove huge towards the tail end of both of their lives. The big story, though, in Matt Iannello's life was obviously his connection to not only Times Square and the sex trade, but his involvement with restaurants. And interestingly enough, during his rise to becoming a capo and having a legitimate life in the mob, in 1972, he would loan his brother, Bobby, the money to buy a restaurant. It was in Little Italy, where they had grown up. Surprisingly enough, it was Umberto's Clam House. Now, obviously, that now is still around. It's a huge restaurant. It's a known commodity in New York. But this is where a very famous hit blackjack would go down. And obviously, this would be something that would be a fascinating situation because Matthew Iannello was actually present for that hit. The hit we're talking about would occur on April 7th, 1972. Obviously, early in the wee hours of that day, Joe Gallo would be out celebrating his birthday. And he, his wife, his bodyguards, and some friends would decide that they're going to have dinner somewhere super late. And Umberto's will be open 24 hours. They go over to Umberto's. As they're sitting there, an individual called Sonny Pinto DiBiase walks into the bar, not Frank Sheeran. Sonny DiBiase walks into the bar, sees Gallo, and starts firing on him. According to the Nevada Daily Mail, Matty Iannello was, quote, at the cash register that night, but he would dive into the kitchen and lay on the tile floor with his hands over his eyes as soon as the gunshots came down. He would then make his way out of the back door and demand that he knew nothing about it and that he didn't see anything. But weirdly enough, he was very involved with Umberto's Clam House Blackjack, and I'm sure he would probably be pretty pissed off that they used his bar or restaurant as the environment for a huge hit like that.
You would have to think so. I mean, he was the owner of the restaurant. In fact, the restaurant was named after his father, Umberto. And yeah, I'd be pretty upset about it if that happened in my restaurant. Although you would like to think that some, reparations were made to him after the fact, possibly.
Yeah, it was definitely a very publicized hit. And it's kind of funny that he was there. That's kind of fascinating. But, you know, and we'll do a show on Joe Gallo down the road. Definitely a nut in his own right. But so little known fact, Umberto's was given the seed money and properly owned by Matty the Horse Iannello. So Matty was making a name for himself, not only in the restaurant business, but in New York, obviously. In the 70s, he made a lot of money and he was kicking up to a lot of people. And look, Vincent Gigante enjoyed having him as a friend because he was a big time earner, and Matty was enjoying his life. He was making money. He had moved his family out to Long Island by this point. He had four children with his wife, Beatrice, and they had a good life. He was a big time earner. But in the 80s, things start to kind of tail off for Matty Ioniello. And this is where his life gets kind of interesting. In the mid 80s, he would be arrested and ultimately indicted three different times. And it was for a variety of different things. The first indictment would center around charges, including several restaurant and bars and carding companies. Basically, through the use of a wiretap, FBI agents would collect evidence that Matty the Horse was skimming profits from several places that he secretly owned. He would be convicted in 1985 on numerous counts, and he would get 6 years in prison. Ultimately, as well, in 1986, he'd be indicted on other charges, new charges of labor racketeering, bid rigging, extortion, gambling, and a murder conspiracy. And also in 1988, he'd be indicted one more time on racketeering charges involving taking over multiple companies in the gravel industry, which was obviously construction that was big on the New Jersey waterfront. So Matty was really starting to kind of come undone. He would ultimately in 1988 get 13 years in federal prison for being convicted in the bid rigging racketeering case in 1986. So up until this point, 1986, he's, you know, mid 60s. He had not went to prison. He gets hit with 13 years. And that's kind of where, you know, Vincent Gigante obviously has plenty going on. This is right after the Tony Salerno situation. Now Ioniello goes away. So Vinny Gigante is starting to lose Blackjack, his people.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happened to most families during that time, Jeff. This was the you know, beginning of the end for the, you know, height, the apex of organized crime during that era. This is what was going on in the 80s. You saw indictment after indictment after indictment, right? I mean, it happened to every family, and the top guys started to fall one by one by one. And all of a sudden, you know, what was a strong inner circle is significantly weakened.
Yeah, weirdly enough as well, just kind of an interesting story about Matty Ioniello. He always was involved in these interesting kind of things that went on. Obviously, in 1979, this is kind of separate from the mob, but this connects to Matty Ioniello, and I'll explain why. A small child called Eton Potts.
Eton Potts, yeah.
Yeah, he would go missing. He disappeared after he goes to the school bus in Soho, and there would be a huge case. Matty Ioniello actually assisted the FBI in helping them figure this all out. According to a federal prosecutor, Ioniello would help put investigators in touch with a former employee of whom the FBI wanted to interview. The letter didn't describe the results of the interview, but, you know, and ultimately would help in arresting the individual Pedro Hernandez, who would confess to killing Eton Potts in his basement in Manhattan. So, you know, Blackjack, when we look at Ioniello, when we look back on everything he did, this is a war hero. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a guy that helped his country find a brazen and disgusting human being that killed a child. And you're gonna hit him hard like this? What a shame.
I mean, listen, we talked about this with Lucky Luciano, right? And Meyer Lansky, with their aid to the U.S. government during World War II when it was very much needed. I mean, this wasn't, you know, bullshit assistance. This was real stuff. The Eton Potts thing is, I mean, I remember it. I don't remember it. I wasn't alive for it, but I remember hearing about it over the years growing up in New York. It was a very, very famous case. I mean, this kid, you know, cute little whatever he was, 8-year-old boy or whatever, disappears in the middle of Manhattan waiting for a school bus. It was a big deal. And I think, Jeff, you know, in all the shows we've done so far, almost everyone, and there's a couple of outliers, right? But almost everyone, these guys aren't guys that relish chaos or havoc or seeing bad things happen to people. I think that when something like this happens, you know, a little boy goes missing, you probably sit around. I think these guys probably sit around and say, hey, if we can do anything, let's fucking go do it. Because whoever did this deserves to be wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, it's almost they have compassion, right? You know, and we saw, weirdly enough, remember in Sopranos in season one when the soccer coach is having a relationship with Meadows' teammates? Artie wants Tony to, like, deal with him. And, you know, ultimately Tony calls the police and the police deal with him.
Yeah, it's because I think that the primary distinction between most people in organized crime, not all, but most, and your garden variety criminal is they don't necessarily have a criminal's mindset. They have more of a business mindset.
Yeah, no, 100%. Interestingly, when Matty the Horse went into prison, some interesting things were coming out about the businesses he was involved in. There was also a story at one point, Blackjack, that he would was skimming proceeds from a hot dog cart company that was selling hot dogs outside of Yankee Stadium. He would also be listed in 1986 in that Fortune magazine article of the top 50 mafia leaders. He would be listed at 35. In front of Nicky Scarfo and just behind his boss, Vincent Gigante. So this is how rich and powerful Matty Iannella was. He would, quote, at one point have $200,000 in cash in his home. He was a rich man, and he would go away, ultimately getting 13 years. He would be released in 1995, which, he would do, about 8 years, not bad. But by that point, things are starting to come undone in the Genovese crime family. Vincent Gigante would go to prison in 1997. At that point, Quiet Dom Cirillo would take over the family. Quiet Dom was Vincent Gigante's basically Jackie the Nose D'Amico. He was his heir apparent. He did everything for Vincent Gigante. But actually, Cirillo would act as the messenger to the streets. Between Gigante, he would take over the family in 97, but would ultimately retire in 98 after getting a heart attack. So he finally becomes boss and has a heart attack. At that point in 1998, Matty the Horse Iannella would take over control of the Genovese crime family and become acting boss. He was still deeply involved with unions. He was also involved with different takeovers, including medical centers and the garbage industry. Keep in mind, this is where we talk about this Netflix documentary. So in the early 2000s, between 2001 and 2005, Matty Iannella is receiving all sorts of money, up to close to $1 million, from an individual called James Galanti. James Galanti owned multiple waste businesses, including these different companies that literally controlled Western Connecticut, Putnam County, Westchester County, New York. This is a big, vast area that he controlled. According to the feds, at one point, his businesses were worth over $100 million. They handled 80% of garbage hauling in Southern and Western Connecticut and obviously into New York. And what would happen is ultimately Iannella would go to Galanti and say, look, we want a piece of this. And if you don't fucking play ball and pay me, you're going to have a problem. Throughout that 4 years, Iannella would make almost $800,000 from James Galanti. So when people ask us, was James Galanti in the mob? No, he was not in the mob. He knew people in the mob. He was pretty much told to pay up or shut up. And he would be allowed to kind of throw around the name of Matty the Horse Iannella. And ultimately, that would be a crime because he would fix bids and he would use his mafia connection to win bids and do all that stuff. And ultimately, scare people. I mean, Blackjack, if you were in the carding industry and Jimmy Galanti comes in and says, look, yeah, I know who Matty the Horse Iannella is, and he's my friend. I mean, would you get in his way?
No, I would not. And a couple of things about Jimmy Galanti. I think first, Jimmy Galanti liked to act like he was in the mob, even though he wasn't. But he liked to put that image out there as much as he could. And the other thing is, I'll give Jimmy Galanti credit. He took his time and did his time like a man.
Yeah, he definitely did. That's 100% right. Good point. It's funny because Ainiello would be asked to be paid quarterly, a mob tax of 30 G's for his services. Now, those services weren't exactly services. He was just getting a check every couple of months for nothing. But that's what the mob does, and that's what makes Matty Ainiello so interesting. This, though, would ultimately be his undoing. On July 27, 2005, Matty Ainiello would be indicted on racketeering charges, including extortion and loan sharking. And funny enough, when the FBI went to his home to arrest him, he'd be sitting there in his bedroom attire watching The Godfather 2. So kind of life imitating art in that aspect. He would also be indicted in federal court in Connecticut on charges of racketeering involving that trash hauling business. So, you know, ultimately the Ainiello stuff with James Glanty would bring back all sorts of negative things. That would be a big thing for him. That'd be part of kind of his sentence ultimately. Look, by this point in 2005, Matty the Horse is an old man. I mean, he's in his 80s at this point, but he was still a strong earner for the mafia. He was still making a ton of money. He was still very powerful, and he still had a lot of sway. It didn't matter that he was a silver-haired guy and didn't look too imposing. He was still very much involved. And this Galanti guy, he saw money signs. The problem was he had a lot of other things going on, Galanti, obviously that hockey team and all the crazy shit that was going on. I think you made a good point, Blackjack. He believed that he was in the mob, and he had the pictures of the mobsters on his wall, and he met Jimmy Gandolfini, and
he thinks he's the inspiration for the Sopranos because he's got a kid named AJ.
Yeah, right. Now, before we get into whatever happened to Ainiello, Galanti would be charged in the 93 count indictment. He would ultimately plead not guilty, and some things will go on with the trial. But he would be found guilty and end up going to prison for his role in that behavior. He would also get arrested or have some trouble with his United Hockey League stuff, which you can watch the documentary to find that out. But again, was not in the mafia, had to forfeit a lot of money, a lot of property, a lot of cars, a lot of back taxes, a lot of everything. You know, that's what you have to do when you deal with the mob sometimes. But for Matt Ainiello, things would kind of finish out on a pittering patter. He would plead guilty to the New York racketeering charge and receive 18 months. He would also plead guilty in Connecticut in the trash hauling scheme and get 2 years, which would run concurrent with the 18-month New York sentence. His attorneys would ask that he would be given some leniency. According to them, he had cancer and was in poor health. In 2009, after serving 2 years, he would be released from FMC Butner. Interestingly enough, Matty the Horse would live about 3 years later, in August 15th of 2012. He would die in peace, which is what you want, at his home in Old Westbury, New York, which is a very proper suburb.
Very expensive area.
Yeah, that's where Victoria Gotti lived for many years. He would die of heart problems related to health problems for his heart and other illnesses, including prostate cancer. So he would die in 2012 at the age of 92. Pretty long life and a pretty fascinating life. This is a guy that was a war hero, was heavily involved with really the maturation and the bad times of Times Square, but it made him a whole lot of money. It made the Genovese family slowly into what they were. They were all earners at the end of the day. He didn't make hundreds of millions like Tony Salerno, but he was one of the biggest earners in the family through his ability to weasel his way into things. He was big in restaurants. He was big in the sex industry. He was huge in unions. He had a great ability just being all different sorts of things. And this is what makes a great gangster as far as an earner. Can you go out and make money everywhere? And Matty the Horse Ainiello did that. He also helped the government in finding a lewd and terrible child abductor and killer. And he was involved with an individual they would ultimately make a Netflix documentary about, who you would shake down. What a wild life.
Yeah, it is. And as you said, it was a long one. He didn't serve a ton of time in prison. And it was a very lucrative life. So all in all, I mean, not a bad run for Matty the Horse.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, the current boss of the family, he was the last, Matty was the last boss before this individual. So, you know, the Genoveses have been through such a wild ride. I mean, we go back to the 1890s with Giuseppe Morello being the first real mobster in America, you know, going to Joe the Boss and all that stuff, then to Lucky Luciano, then to Vito Genovese, then to Frank Costello, then to, you know, Tommy Eboli, then to Benny Lombardo, then to Gigante, then to the nutty stuff with Cirillo and then Ianiello and now Barney Bellomo. It's a crazy family. It's a fascinating family, but we can't tell the story of the Genovese family without the fascinating life of Matty Ianiello. We could agree a war hero, maybe was involved with the maturation and the success of Mickey Mantle. Is that possible to say? Maybe.
Possibly.
Who's one of the great baseball players ever, won the Triple Crown in 1956. We could argue is one of the greatest players ever. So a fascinating life. I'm glad we were able to talk about him. Definitely someone that not a lot of people know about, but I felt important after that documentary to talk about a little. Did you like the documentary? What did you think?
I did. I thought it was really interesting. It's called Untold. I think it's Crime and Punishment on Netflix. And it's really the story of Jimmy Galante and his son buying and operating this UHL hockey team in Danbury, Connecticut, which is – it really is a fascinating story. Like there's nothing like it that exists today in the world. So I'd recommend giving it a watch.
Keep in mind, Jimmy Galante would get out in 2014 after serving 7 years. He would be contacted by The Atlantic for a profile in May 2018, but told the outlet that he was just into enjoying his life. Obviously, he was not featured in a speaking role in that documentary. He would be they would ask him kind of what he's got going on now. He no longer is involved with the Garbage Empire and has no association with the mafia, according to him. I was kind of annoyed that he didn't. He didn't talk in that, did he? I don't think it.
Jimmy? No, Jimmy talked.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I forget. Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy talked in the documentary. He talked plenty. He's, you know, he seems like a decent guy. I mean, like, you know, he loves his family, loves his son to death. You know, but like I said, he comes off as one of those guys who tries to make himself sound like he was more important than he was.
100%. Well said. The fact that he named his son AJ is kind of wild, but there you go. A quicker one today, but a fascinating one. I don't know if anyone in the mob can say they had the life that Matty the Horse had. Just a wild ride,
yep. For sure.
And a long life nonetheless. All right, that's the show for this week. We will be back next week. And I got a feeling, I'm thinking we do Sonny Franzese possibly. We'll see. We'll figure that out next week. Maybe we'll let Blackjack pick. I don't know. But that's the show. Thanks for listening. As always, make sure you check out our sponsors. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. Check us out on YouTube as well. We are rocking and rolling here, folks. If you have something you want us to talk about, please contact me. And again, as long as they're not these people that we're definitely going to cover, if you have someone random you want to talk about, maybe reach out or whatever. Blackjack, thanks as always. Good stuff from you. Nice to hear you as always. Go check out Blackjack on Twitter. I posted his Twitter account and I urge you to go follow him, Blackjack Fletcher. And you'll find him. It's pretty easy to find him on Twitter. Thanks, Blackjack.
Thanks, buddy. Sounds good.
Yeah, we'll talk to you all next week and we'll be here for another week of the Sit Down. Have a great week.